the Wood County Prevention Coalition podcast, dedicated to bringing educational information to prevent substance abuse and help individuals achieve a healthy well-being.
Hello, my name is Tina Bradley, and you're listening to the Wood County Prevention Coalition podcast. I am the coordinator for the Drug-Free Communities Grant, as well as the Prevention Coalition in Wood County, Ohio. Today, I'm talking to Dr. Faith DiNardo and Ashley Hartman of Bowling Green State University, as well as Dr. Bill Avoska, our coalition's data and evaluation consultant, about problem gambling, and especially as it relates to Wood County, Ohio. For those who don't yet know us, I'm going to read our mission statement. We are a coalition of compassionate community members working together to coordinate high-quality programs for the prevention of youth substance abuse in Wood County, Ohio. Our vision is helping youth be drug-free, responsible, and productive citizens. And our tagline is Uniting for a Drug-Free Wood County since 2004. What I'd like to do is kind of start off with everybody just doing a round robin introduction. I've introduced myself, so.
Good morning, Tina. Kyle Clark, Prevention Education Director here at the Wood County Educational Service Center.
Hello, I'm Ashley Hartman, health educator at Bowling Green State University, focusing on mental health.
Hi there, I'm Faith DiNardo, director of the Wellness Connection and co-director of our Center for Violence Prevention Education at Bowling Green State University.
Hi Tina, Bill Avoska, and I work here at the ESC doing research and evaluation.
Welcome everyone. Before we get into our recent results, survey data that Dr. Avoska is going to present, I'm going to ask Kyle to kind of give us a little bit of a history. This is nothing new to us here in Wood County. Prevention of problem gambling has been on our radar for quite some time. Can you kind of talk about how that started and the funding and any kind of a law that relates to this and kind of start us out with that, please?
Sure thing. You know, people may say, what are you doing working with gambling prevention in schools? Well, and although our data is going to show, I think, some interesting things that are happening in Wood County, when we first started talking about it, we were kind of asking ourselves the same thing. Why gambling? But we were noticing a few things in our surveys that we were running a few years ago. And then with the advent of legalization of casinos and racinos in the state of Ohio about 5 years ago, somewhere in that vicinity, one of the things that the state legislators did, which I thought was outstanding on their part, was that they required, as part of the legalization process, they required casinos and racinos to provide the state with a percentage of their profit to be used and go towards prevention, education, and treatment for problem gambling in the state of Ohio, and prevention education in general. That money was then distributed through our county Adamus boards, and so our Wood County Adamus board provided us with our money. And so far, our percentage that we receive in Wood County is right around $42,000 a year. So we're able to provide and get all of our staff trained in all the various prevention education programs that we offer, and we have actually then incorporated all those things into our normal prevention programming and added that as a risky behavior right along with alcohol, tobacco, and other drug, relationship violence, and mental health issues. So that's kind of the history, and that's kind of the setup. And then we've become very sophisticated at asking students and youth questions on our survey, and I don't want to take Bill's thunder away, so I'll turn it back over. So there's kind of a quick history.
Sounds great. And I'll give, before we hop on over to Bill, I'll give kind of a sense of this past year. We were awarded $15,000, our coalition, in problem gambling prevention dollars from the Prevention Action Alliance, and we utilized those funds. That grant now has ended. It started in, I believe, January, and we wrapped it up here early May. but we utilize those dollars for advertising, the training of some of our prevention education specialists so they could take information into the classrooms. And we also worked with the manager of the prevention education program here at Wood County Educational Service Center, and she identified some curriculum and different supplies that could be utilized by the prevention specialist in the classroom. So that's kind of a recent thing that we have wrapped here. But Bill, can you kind of share with us some recent survey data? I kind of understand there's an uptick in instances of problem gambling. Can you expound on this, please?
Sure, Tina. Actually, a variety of things will just come out during our podcast here. But let's start with a big picture of just the Wood County environment. Let's look at what most people do is go buy scratch-off tickets and lottery tickets, and they get into online gaming, you know, with rolling cash and lotto ones and keynos and all those number of games you can buy. Just some perspective. Back in 2014, okay, so 8 years ago, Wood County residents spent $24 million at the Ohio Lottery, okay, buying all those kinds of things. In 2017, 3 years later, they spent $29 million. So it went up a little bit. In 21, they spent $41 million. Huge increase. So we saw a lot more gambling activity recently. I talked with officials from the Ohio Lottery Commission, and they thought that much of that was pandemic related. People didn't have anything to do, and they were gambling. So it went out, and some of that was that way. But I don't know, is it going to drop back down again, or do we have some new habits that have started in the environment? And also in the last year, the state legislature, Kyle mentioned, that allowed casinos to come in, passed House Bill 29, which now allows casinos, sports teams, stadiums, bars, restaurants, everyone literally can apply for a gambling license. And so you're going to see even cell phone apps are now going to be legal. So literally all kinds of bars and restaurants, veterans halls, Eagles clubs, all those groups you can go into now, gambling will become available in 2023. I believe that's when that would really start. And they estimate that there'll be $3.5 billion in revenue from those gambling sources. So that's sort of the big picture environment that we're seeing ourselves in now. And as you can imagine then, there's lots of people, most people will have fun with gambling. But then there are those people who will have too much fun and can start turning into addiction. So we want to follow those trends of those groups. And we look at high school age kids. We looked at college age kids. We looked at adults in the community, all separately, because the targets are different depending on your age, your gender, and the like. And we can get into that in a minute if you'd like to talk about that as well.
Sounds great. Sounds great. Well, I'm going to give some time now to Faith and Ashley. Can you folks tell our listeners about Bowling Green State University's Wellness Connection and how they're involved in preventing and addressing problem gambling, please?
Sure. Thanks, Tina. So just to tell you a little bit about the Wellness Connection at Bowling Green State University, you know, we focus on a variety of health and wellness topics, and we do prevention, education, and awareness around things like alcohol and other drug use, physical education, nutrition, sexual health, and certainly problem gambling is one of those topics that we're interested in and happy to partner with you all and the county and Wood County Educational Service Center and the Adamus Board on these efforts. And in order to do so, we've done a variety of things, one being to conduct the survey of our college students. And we've done that a few times now over the years to collect data just to monitor, you know, how our students are engaging in these practices. And it's been interesting to monitor over time and kind of see those gradual increases. And it'll be interesting, as Bill said, to see where this takes us as we move forward. So that's certainly what we do with a variety of different topics, is to monitor the trends and the data. So we will certainly see that. But, you know, to do a survey, working with our IRB and doing a randomized sample of our students to collect that data. So that's one way in which we kind of partner and monitor things. We also do kind of that awareness, prevention, education piece through different means. We have what we call late night alternative programs for our students, in which students are able to come out to a fun environment, right, where we've got a variety of things. Maybe we have inflatables, we've got food, we've got games, we've got music, all sorts of things. But we also like to provide that educational piece in there too. And so it's been great to have you all partner with us on that and be able to provide that educational piece to our students as well. So that's one way in which we do that. And then just, you know, tabling events and other events that we have throughout the academic year for our students to infuse that prevention, education, and awareness piece to our students. And as we monitor those trends, we'll see, you know, what we might have to enhance or change in order to monitor and, you know, increase those messages as we see the data change perhaps throughout the years. And I wanted to kind of turn it over to Ashley at this point because she has a unique role. She is obviously our health educator at BGSU, but also has a role within the state for the Problem Gambling Network of Ohio. And I think it's interesting to hear some of those pieces. So I'm going to turn it over to Ashley to describe that.
Thanks, Faith. So as Faith mentioned, I am part of the Problem Gambling Network of Ohio. I serve as the board president. So I think one thing I want to add is for prevention and treatment professionals within behavioral health, Problem Gambling Network of Ohio is a wonderful group to connect with. They offer training to help treatment professionals receive their GAM endorsement through the Ohio Chemical Dependency Professionals Board. So if you'd like to have scope of practice in treating problem gamblers, that's a wonderful way to get that education and supervision. Also for our prevention specialists, they've expanded the training that they offer. So in addition to their stage one, which is a general overview for our prevention and treatment professionals, they have now a specific stage two training focusing on problem gambling prevention. They also host the statewide Problem Gambling Conference, provide advocacy opportunities. So just another wonderful way to stay connected and bring those resources to local communities. So thank you.
And actually, that conference that you just mentioned, actually, I was there in February, and some of our staff was as well, the prevention staff. And then I think Bill and Kyle and that same group of folks that I mentioned were down there were also part of the virtual segment that was the month prior, January. So do you want to, you kind of teased that there was a little bit more data, Bill,
sure,
that you might want to share with us, please?
Sure. We looked at the rates of gambling in three groups: school-aged kids that are still in K-12, Bowling Green State University, as Faith mentioned, and then also adults in the community. And amongst the school-age youth, we found an increase in gambling activities amongst mostly upperclassmen, particularly males in grades 11 and 12. However, and we also saw an increase in, so we looked at activities, but we also then looked at what's called disordered gambling or problem gambling. And a few years ago, the American Psychiatric Association officially made gambling an addictive disease, worthy of treatment and able to be diagnosed through the DSM-5. And that's what Ashley just talked about, the gambling endorsements that are important for clinicians so that they can legally treat and get and receive remuneration for that kind of treatment. But we saw an increase in gambling disorder amongst particularly males in school-age youth. Now, males not only, or all school-age youth, not only have been hit by their parents probably engaging in the lottery commission like we talked about in the environment, but they're also getting hit hard by marketing and advertising for sports gambling in particular. Anybody who watched basketball during March Madness saw FanDuel and DraftKings putting it on your phone, teaching gambling lingo and how to organize yourself in that way. And kids are a part of that. Parents are doing it. Kids are doing it. Now, interestingly, while we saw an increase in the amount of activity, most of the activity was reported by kids as only a few times a year. It didn't look like they were doing it daily and weekly. So it's kind of like sneaking into their lives, but not necessarily dominating their lives just yet. Males, on the other hand, are a little bit different. They're starting getting engaging more. Another thing that's hitting youth besides just gambling activities is gaming activities. You see a lot of preponderance now of all kinds of multimedia player games that kids can get involved with each other, and they can gamble within that game. So that's kind of a different way, and we're seeing a lot of money in marketing going after kids. And we ask kids, by the way, how often do you gamble 2 hour game, 2 hours or more a day? How many days do you gamble 2 hours every day? And like 35% of the kids overall, amongst younger kids, fifth and sixth graders, like half of them say they gamble or game 2 hours or more every day. So now that we have gambling within the game, and we have kids gaming an awful lot, that's a whole nother place in which kids can get hooked. And then there's a third thing that I see coming up a lot now is what we call esports. And there's nothing wrong with esports. It's multiplayers, and high schools have teams. BGSU has an intercollegiate athletic team. But there is also an invitation to gamble within the esport activity. And some kids who, when they become gamers, feel like, well, I'm so skilled at it, I'm so knowledgeable about it, I probably have an edge and I can win if I gamble within that esport activity. And that's kind of a false belief, by the way, but they'll gamble and they need to get involved in that. So kids are getting particularly vulnerable in lots of ways, and we're kind of watching some of that. We also, as Faith mentioned, did a survey of BGSU students. It was a randomized sample. I wouldn't call it necessarily the most scientific, but pretty close to the best we can do. And we saw an increase in gambling activities amongst BGSU students. And different from high school age kids, BGSU students, particularly males, did say that they gambled not just once or twice a year, but daily and weekly. And guess where that was, as you would imagine, in fantasy sports, FanDuel, DraftKings. We saw males, for example, 3.5% said they did it daily, and 4.5% said they did it weekly. Well, that's 8% of BGSU males playing DraftKings on a daily, weekly basis. So that's of concern. We also asked them about gaming, because college kids game too, sometimes just to relax between classes or to relieve stress. And there was plenty of gaming going on, as well as disordered gambling within the game. Bowling Green rates for males, for example, back in 15 when Faith and I started doing it, males reported about 8% found this problematic. Now it's 14%. So it's gone up 6% over the past few years of kids being a little bit stressed and unable to manage and control their gaming and the like. And therefore, all the more reason, as Ashley mentioned, where if they were to go to the counseling center or to seek treatment, that those providers have been trained by the Adamus Board or for the PGNO to provide reliable treatment to them to help them with that disorder. The third group we looked at were adults in the community. And we found that, as I mentioned already, when gambling went from 28 million to 40 million, obviously there's a lot more going on in the community. And we also found a slight uptick in problem gambling in the community of adults as well. But not as much amongst adults as it is amongst school-age males and college males. Those seem to be the younger men from 18 to 30 is that place where you see the majority of the activities where most are at risk. And we want to identify that because, you know, while Kyle said we have $40,000, that's not enough to paint the whole earth with. We need to be very specific with what we do and target our money, target our prevention in particular ways. Back to the adults in the community, we asked all of the prevention providers, you know, the therapists in the community, how much they're seeing, and they're not seeing a large amount yet in Wood County. Now, they are in other counties, Cuyahoga, the Columbus area, Cincinnati area. There's places where you see a big increase by providers, but not so much in Wood County. It seems to be a little bit more rural still and a little bit less affected by this than you might see in other places. But Kyle and I concluded that the coffee pot is percolating. We just don't know whether it's a one cup or it's going to be one of those big church things where it can serve the whole party, how many cups are going to come out in the next few years. But certainly things are changing. More opportunity is available. It's going to increase more opportunity. We've seen plenty of marketing from it. So I'm predicting we'll continue to see an uptick, probably at BG and probably in the schools as well, and therefore all the more need for prevention, education, and treatment.
And what we find as a notable point of interest, and as you said, targeting our efforts and our money, I want to spend just a little bit of time, Bill, educating the audience on when kids are gaming, and if they get into a program that includes a little bit of gambling, let's talk a minute about what a loot box or a treasure chest is, because a lot of the adults haven't heard these terms and aren't sure what's going on. They may hear their kids talking about it, but don't really know what's happening. And that's where some of the gambling early root addiction type causes could start to occur and then transfer over to gambling. So what is a loot box? What's a treasure
You know, box? It's funny, the last time we did a podcast, we had a technician from BGSU, a student, come and help us set this all up, and we were talking about this. And when we got done, he was in disagreement with me. He said, you know, you talk about loot boxes, but I am a professional gamer, and I don't try and buy and gamble loot boxes. I earn points to get weapons and tools and things that I can beat my opponents and win. And he said, I have to admit, though, I'm a purist, I'm a true gamer, and that's the best way to do it. But some people, these are the kids I guess they don't necessarily like, don't want to have the patience to earn the weapons and the tools that'll help them win. They can buy it. And when you buy it in a game, you have to gamble. So let's pretend, Kyle, you and I are in this battle, and you have a sword, and I want to have a bigger sword so I can win in our quest to whatever we're doing. Well, as we're going down our fantasy road, literally, there might be a treasure chest, and I can spend money to open that treasure chest. And so I buy a credit card, I can enter my money, and the treasure chest will open, and lo and behold, I got nothing. There was nothing in there, but snakes came out or bugs or something. So I can be acceptable with that, or I could maybe have not experienced any satisfaction with that, and I think I've got to try this again. And that's where some of the clinical questions that we start to ask about, can you control that kind of gaming activities? Do you chase your losses, so to speak? I didn't win. I spent money. I didn't win, so I'll try it again. And the next time, and this is going to be bad because it's intermittent reward, I do win a big sword, and now suddenly I'm more powerful than you. Well, now I want to do that again as we go down the road. And next thing you know, I'm gambling on what they call a loot box or a treasure chest to see if I can gain weapons and win those weapons and continue on. And they make it very inviting, very rewarding. And like I said, some kids don't do that. They just might enjoy playing with their friends, but some kids might engage in gambling within the game. They call that the gamblification of games. And it's becoming a big part of the world today.
Thank you. Thank you. And I see that as part of our educational piece then, just like anything else, trying to explain to the youth what's out there, what's possible, what could happen. Again, it's kind of like our whole campaign of Mr. Be Cool. We always have a choice, and there's consequences for some of those choices. And certainly we hope they make the right ones. So. Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to add a little bit more to it, Kyle. As you know, we asked another, which I thought was kind of a weird group of three questions, but I was wondering about it when we created a survey. And the indicator was something, it was called the Preference for a Virtual Life Scale, PVL, Preference for a Virtual Life. And the three questions we asked were to agree or disagree with the statement, I am more valuable online than in real life. That's a powerful statement. I'm more valuable as a person online in the online world than in the real life world. I'm more respected in the online world than the real life world. And I prefer communicating with people more online than face to face. And we found a lot of people felt that way. Now, those of us that are older, we only know face-to-face. But younger people today grow up in an online world. And for some people, like if you earned a scholarship to BG, to the esports team, then that might be true. I am more valuable in some ways. But we have to watch where we're going with kids, because they can find a lot of value and a lot of satisfaction in a world that might not have the kinds of things that we want to see in it. And so education is not just about gaming, but about, you know, resiliency and who are you as a youth and what are you as a person.
Exactly.
I have two words, and most of our listeners may not understand the connection, but I think the folks in this room will. Energy drinks.
Oh.
How does that play into this whole what we surmise?
Sure, Bill. Let's talk about energy drinks, and we've kind of been watching it for years, and everybody kind of laughs at us when we talk about it, but it's starting to really make sense to us now.
Well, and I don't want to pick on Faith, but I will.
Oh, thanks, Bill.
Because BGSU had an esports tournament. All the BG competed with all the other, you know, Big Ten schools around, or the MAC. I think it was probably the MAC schools. And guess who the biggest financial sponsor of your esports tournament was? Red Bull. So, you know, kids might stay up late at night gaming. And, of course, you have to stay alert and sharp so you can win your game. So you take caffeinated energy drinks such as Red Bull. And there's a big increase in that kind of junior varsity addictive drug going on in the schools and in youth today.
If I remember right, I think our survey showed like just over 50% of our seniors.
Oh yeah,
are drinking
more so too. Yeah, in overall, some parts of the county we saw even more of it.
And we look at ourselves and say, well, yeah, we're drinking coffee, aren't we drinking caffeinated energy drinks? Well, there's a big difference between the amount of caffeine in a normal cup of coffee versus an energy drink. I don't think I remember the exact numbers, but it's quite a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, I just want to add, this is Ashley. You know, when you look at this combination of social isolation, which we've seen our young people experience, we've seen our college students experience, just being able to connect socially is really difficult. And so in the programming we're doing on campus, any way we can promote social connectedness, which falls into that Judd Foundation model for comprehensive suicide prevention within higher education and also K through 12 schools, just being able to connect in that intersection of energy drinks, vaping, staying up late, disrupting your sleep, and this 10-year decline that's been seen around college mental health. It's just, I think, as preventionists, we're all aware, how can rising tides lift all boats? How do we promote resiliency, social connectedness, life skills, things that are just gonna help people? We do a lot of mindfulness, workshops on campus, events around managing stress and anxiety, building self-compassion that we collaborate with the counseling center. So just being able to promote those protective factors among this high-risk population is incredibly important. And then, you know, that additional layer of our young people engaging in other risky substances, alcohol, marijuana, you know, not to get, you know, all over the place, but I think just highlighting as all these things intersect, just the higher risk folks are at.
Right there, we saw what they called clinically comorbidity, where you'll see amongst those who are gambling, they're also more likely to be engaging in some illicit drug use like marijuana. While caffeinated energy drinks is not illegal, but it's part of it. Usually those other things are associated with the activity.
And then, of course, another contributing issue, the caffeinated energy drinks and the gaming contribute to what we are starting to see a lot more of in high schools and middle schools, and that's kids who are too tired to attend classes. There's an absenteeism. There's kids who literally go to sleep at school in the mornings. So it's affecting our academic achievement amongst our high schools and junior high schools. It's affecting their total educational process as well. So it's a battle that we're all in together.
Yeah. We are starting to see some reports from SROs, school resource officers, of kids gaming or gambling in school. Now, they can't do it on their Chromebooks because they're typically blocked and the like, but some schools allow upperclassmen to carry their phones with them. So kids can use their phones, and if they're bored in school, they can be gambling, indoor gaming. So we're seeing some of that occur as well.
Do you have any final thoughts from anyone? This is certainly going to be interesting to see if it's going to be the one cup or the whole pot kind of serving of
yes.
What is of great concern to us right now, because if it is the uptick that just keeps going, then certainly. But I think the prevention education efforts on all fronts here with the young individuals in both the college and the elementary and high schools, junior highs, are going to have an impact too. So we'll see what plays out here the next time we serve.
And even if it's only a few or a smaller number, it's always a concern to me, and I mentioned this to Kyle, about the trajectory that kids can take if they get hurt along the way. So if you are a good student at BGSU and you're doing well, but then somehow you gamble too much and you lose your tuition money or you gamble and get in trouble legally in some way, it's going to affect your family, it's going to affect your relationships with other people, and then suddenly that life trajectory can go in the wrong direction. And therefore I very much appreciate what the BGSU team is doing to help provide wellness and other clinical providers to help those kids who do happen to take the wrong turn get back on course.
Well, unfortunately, our time here is coming to a close. I want to thank all of our special guests today for joining us for this important topic. Next time, we'll be back with more exciting prevention information. I'll give you that little teaser there. I'm not going to say what it will be, but in the meantime, check us out online at www.wcprevention.org. And while you're there, you can link into our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages as well. Thank you so much.
This podcast is intended for educational purposes only. Those views expressed on the podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the Wood County Educational Service Center or the Wood County Prevention Coalition.